Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Gigabit Nation, Broadband Talk Radio. I'm your host, Craig Settles, and I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today as we provide useful information and insights to help public, private, and nonprofit organizations get more, better broadband everywhere that it needs to be. Now, one of the big questions that will always be asked, you know, early on in every community's effort to move broadband forward is the question of how is this going to be paid for? And this is not a easy question in some places and for some communities, but it is an issue that that definitely needs to be addressed. My general feeling about discussing financial and fundraising issues is that I think people have a very narrow scope of what they think their options are and fail to see other possible options that are roaming around them. And so a lot of what I try to do is bring these other options to people's attention so that, you know, you may eventually find that the option may not work, you know, one works better than the other. But I think it's best that we look at all our options as a community and then make a decision based on what makes the most amount of sense for your community. So one of those areas or options, if you will, for funding are municipal bonds, which in the course of the discussion of broadband in the U.S. over the last 6 years has either been in high favor, has been out of favor. Now I'm not sure what people think when they think about municipal bonds, but I think it's time to really consider these again because I think we're out of that period where it didn't make a lot of sense, but now the financial climate seems to be changing, and so these probably should come back on the table as one of your serious considerations. So I brought two experts on today to talk about this from a couple of angles. One is David Shaw, who is the chief of the government and utilities industry section of Curtin McConkie law firm, and they're in Utah. And also Laura Lewis, who is the principal at the municipal financial advisory firm Lewis, Young, Robertson, and Birmingham, also in Utah. And to both of you, Laura and David, thank you very, very much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So let's start with, actually, before we get into the mechanics of bonding, I don't know if that's the right word to use for bond measures, why don't, starting with Dave, you guys tell me what your firm does and where your area of expertise is in this bond discussion.
Yeah, thank you, Craig. It's a pleasure to be on the show. I'm a partner at the law firm Curtin McConkie. We're the largest firm in the state of Utah. And in the context of municipal bonding, what I do is I represent cities as borrowers as they go to the bond market to seek money and make sure that they basically do it right. It can be very complicated and very convoluted, and if you don't do it right, you get in a lot of trouble. And so that's what I do. I represent the borrower in making sure they do things the way they should be.
Okay. And Laura?
Yes, we have been in business serving local governments financing needs for just about 19 years. And I was in the same type of business prior to that for about 6 years with an underwriting firm. And our firm's focus is on providing independent municipal advisory services to local clients when they are seeking debt measures. Our job is to bring to them all of the various options that they could use, and we're very fortunate in Utah. We have a lot of, proverbial arrows in our quiver that we can use in meeting their financing needs. And so our job is to sit down with them and show them both quantitatively and practically how the different alternatives would work and what the impacts are, and help them structure the debt in a way that is most conducive to meet their needs.
Okay. So you know, our audience is a mix of folks who are key stakeholders, key advocates, and the broadband project teams that actually get the work done. They are probably heavily maybe economic development oriented. They are city staff. They may not necessarily be financial wizards, but at the same time, as you know, we had the show yesterday where we talked about non-techie people need to understand a lot of the technology because understanding it helps with a number of key decisions that they have to make in the course of the project. I am going to go out on a limb here and say that probably all of those key stakeholders driving a broadband project should have some basic understanding of finance in a number of areas, because I think that the traditional avenues for raising money, financial institutions, banks, and you know, groups such as yours are all part of this mix. So with that in mind, so we're all on the same page, what's a municipal bond and what role does it play in this world of financing or potentially financing broadband network projects?
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, sure. And so the basic notion is a municipal bond is a form of a loan. And it's a loan that has to have collateral to it. It has to have some form of payback. And so that's one of the key elements is that figuring out what the collateral is, what type of loan will it be, that's where Laura and I come into play in making sure that we can decipher the nuances of the bond markets for the city officials so they understand them. And our job is to make it easy. So, so in its core essence, it's really just a loan, but it's a loan that can last a long time, and it's a loan that basically gets traded in the bond marketplace.
So, Laura, what you know, I made the assumption, you know, in my opening remarks that people need to have some level of understanding of financial issues. What kinds of things should people educate themselves on if they want to, you know, come at this from a logical perspective? I mean, I'm not sure to think I need to go get an MBA in accounting and finance, but there's probably some basics that I should learn from somewhere about, you know, financing as it pertains to, you know, the bond effort if they're going to go that way.
Right. Well, there are not a lot of great sources in regard to like textbooks of where to go to learn how to do municipal bonds, and that's probably in large part because municipal bond law varies state to state. From a federal perspective, one of the overriding things are bonds are technically securities. They are under the scrutiny of the SEC, FINRA, and the Municipal Securities Rulemaking Board as to how they can and can't be issued. And most importantly, probably the Internal Revenue Service cares greatly about how they're issued. And from a national perspective, depending upon how bonds are structured and who is benefited, whether a private party is benefited or if it's a public entity that is benefited, those bonds might be deemed taxable if it's a private party that you know, benefits from that, or if it's a local government or a nonprofit entity, they could be done on a tax-exempt basis. So that's one very overriding thing that would need to be determined. And then from a state-to-state perspective, there are different types of security structure that Dave Shaw referred to, you know, that can come into play. In some cases, the asset itself can be pledged. The fiber and the network operating center and all the electronics and whatnot can be pledged as security. In other states, that can't be, and we have to pledge a revenue source. In some states, you can do both. So in my opinion, the best thing to do is to seek out, you know, trusted, experienced professionals who have worked in the municipal finance industry, and you know, most of those skilled professionals are willing and able to meet and at least provide some, you know, basic education of what the alternatives are in, you know, whatever state that they're looking in. And, you know, to provide that education, you know, in an hour, hour and a half meeting, and give you some basic framework for what can and can't be done in various states. If it's of interest to you later on in the conversation, I can, you know, give you some of those more, you know, more specifics of kind of the broad brush of tools that are available.
Mm-hmm. And maybe we should talk for a couple of minutes about what each of you respectively are doing in Utah or with the Utopia project. I gather that both of you are involved either directly or indirectly with that project?
Yes, we are.
Both involved, yep.
Okay. So, Laura, we'll start with you this time. What is your role with the Utopia effort?
I am the financial advisor to many of the cities that make up the interlocal cooperative that forms Utopia. Utopia is a separate legal organization that is made up of other local government entities, and my firm represents probably, I haven't ever really counted up, but probably three-fourths of the member entities, and we are then the financial or municipal advisor to Utopia and to the sort of second generation of Utopia, known as the Utah Infrastructure Agency, which is an interlocal cooperative that's made up of a subset of the Utopia members. I've been involved with the member cities since Utopia was introduced to them as an idea to two of my clients, both Orem City and West Valley City, were the first ones to explore the path, and I have been involved with them ever since.
Coolness. And I'm sure your life has been very, both of you have been very entertaining over these last few years with the whole Utopia dance.
Nothing like a good challenge, right?
You clearly have that. So Dave, what's your role there?
So, like Laura, I've been involved with Utopia since before the dinosaurs, so to speak. I serve as the general counsel to Utopia and to the Utah Infrastructure Agency. So I'm involved in all legal matters and have been since the inception of the agency. So in that capacity, we've had quite a ride. Both ups and downs. Been involved when Utopia was the darling child of the municipal broadband industry, and up until now, when it's not looked upon so favorably. So, and through that process, we've watched as cities have learned a lot of lessons in the broadband industry.
Okay, so we highlighted in the in the run up to this show in the description, there are three areas that are of concern, sort of the guide the bonding process. And one is, you know, how well you navigate the political waters, how well you navigate the legal and legality waters, and how well you, keep your head above all of the financial elements of this. So let's start by talking about the politics first. In general, if a community wants to do a bond measure, is your advice that they have all of their political support, either from elected officials and the general public, in line before they bring up the bond issue, or how does what are the political issues that need to be addressed? And I think we'll start with Dave, and then Laura, you can add on to that.
Yeah. In my view, Craig, the political issue, the biggest one at least, is you have to have political heroes who are willing to take the arrows of the detractors. And there will be detractors. We've seen that across the country on almost every project that's come about. whether you're going to a full bond election because it's a general obligation bond, or whether it's something like a revenue bond that doesn't go to a vote of the people. Nonetheless, there will be detractors who cry foul, who claim that that's not the proper role of government, and you need political heroes who are willing to step up to the microphone and say, no, it is, and here's why. If we don't have broadband in our communities, we lose our economic development and we lose our ability to enhance the quality of life. And so that, in my view, is the biggest issue from a political perspective.
Okay. Laura, you want to add to that?
Yeah, one of the other things that I've seen, sort of irrespective of what we're working on from a municipal finance perspective, be that broadband or roads or a rec facility or whatever, is, you know, some really good education of, you know, the constituency that is going to be benefited by the project. And where that, you know, where that occurs best, you see much more favorable support from, you know, the elected officials, you know, from a local government level, like a city council, clear on up to the legislators, and, you know, from a statewide perspective. And it's very, very important relative to the deployment of broadband, because unlike many of those other projects that I referenced, whether that's a roadway or a park, the deployment of broadband, sadly, is not viewed yet as infrastructure that everyone should have access to. And the greater that word can get out, and I'm very encouraged by the fact that, you know, we have a young nation, we have a nation that is very high in terms of its usage of broadband when it's available. And, you know, I think that tide will continue to swell, but I think it's very important in the political context to make sure that, you know, the education gets out at the grassroots, and that those, you know, those grassroots people that are educated seek to educate and mobilize so that the elected officials hear their voices, because they will certainly hear, as Dave indicated, they will certainly hear from, you know, the detractors. And I think it's easy to kind of assume, well, yeah, everybody needs this high speed, and people just assume that people think that. But they really need to get out, you know, get out and talk and educate, so that it gives the backbone to the politicians that they need to stand up and make the right decisions.
Okay. So now, on the show, we have talked about the politics of broadband and treating broadband efforts as a political campaign and so forth. So some of my audience obviously is aware of that. But in general terms, we'll ping pong again here. We'll start with Dave again. What steps do you take? You know, if you're the steering committee or you're the economic development agency and you, by choice or default or whatever, have now taken on the leadership role for the broadband project and you're in, say, the early days of doing this, what are some of the building blocks to a good, call it effort or campaign, to build your political support? I mean, what does that look like in reality?
That's a great question, and I think it stems from who are the local political leaders. And so you have to look at the former politicians, you have to look at the business leaders, and you have to look at those who really drive the community. And those may be grassroots practitioners who do nothing but get out and spread the word. It may be the local chamber of commerce. But irrespective, you have to identify who in the community fills those particular roles. And then, like Laura said, you have to go and educate them. And that's a hand-to-hand combat sort of thing where you really have to sit down and talk about it. And then you have to get together in cottage meetings. You have to get together in local business meetings, the Rotary clubs, the other community clubs, and start to spread the word. When you don't do that, what you'll find is that those who are opposed to the project will do it more effectively. And that's when it becomes a real challenge. So as you find the business leaders, as you find the community leaders, the educators, that's when you spread the word. The other one that I think needs more focus than I think a lot of communities spend time on is the youth community. After all, they're the ones who have 20 different devices who are always on their Wi-Fi. And there's a misnomer that Wi-Fi exists without fiber. It doesn't. all wireless leads back to fiber somewhere.
And so
the more the youth get educated about it and get motivated toward telling their parents, their teachers, their community leaders that this is important, I think there's a bigger opportunity for groundswell.
Okay. Any additional thoughts to that, Laura?
Yeah, your question talked about, if you were an economic development leader in a community, and that's often where we see, the first signs of the, sort of the screaming demand need for high speed comes up through that. And, every city, every county, whatever, their politics are a little bit different. But, I would, suggest that in that instance, the economic development director, meet with, so that he's not just, feel like he or she are pounding their head against the wall, that they meet internally with their leadership first, like a city or county manager. And again, I'm just think from education. Here is what XYZ, business needs, and we can't provide that, and that's why we might not land this industry here. And present the need, the problem, and then present a solution. So they may need to first be able to point to something like elsewhere where it's been done. Know the arrows in their quiver. Can they use assessment bonds? Can they use tax increment in their state for that kind of thing? But say here might be some possible solutions. Get their buy-in first. From an administration standpoint, and then I would very quickly seek to go to the mayor, council, whatever form of government that might be at a county or city, and get one or two leadership there educated and get their buy-in and excitement. I mean, that's what you want to try to build is, won't it be great when we can, provide 1 gig for something that's very affordable. Where I live and versus where I work, it's quite surprising. I pay way more. I live in Salt Lake City, and I don't have access to Utopia Fiber. I pay way more at my office for much lower service than I pay for at my home, where I have Utopia Fiber. That is much faster. And, if you can start to open people's eyes and combined with what Dave said, if you can get, those people to talk to their kids or grandkids or whatever about it, I think they really start to, get that excitement, and that's what needs to build to really get people to buy in and get this done.
Mm-hmm. So, Laura, do you feel that the bond market is more favorable to communities that want to pursue this option for broadband? And I bring up this question because I was in a conversation with a gentleman in Iowa a few weeks ago, and one of his, things, in fact, he was strong in favor of doing this show to talk about the bond option because he feels that we're in a better climate for that. But what's your take on the market?
Yeah, I think we're certainly in a better climate than we have been in, 2007, 2008. But we're not in as good of a climate as we were in pre-2007, 2008. So it's kind of a mixed bag, in my opinion. And, I always seek to structure the debt offerings in a way that will provide the lowest interest cost possible, remembering that, you know, whatever we use as security isn't necessarily what has to be used as repayment.
Mm-hmm.
And more specifically what I mean by that. If you were to call me and say XYZ City wants to go out and do a municipal debt offering where the only thing that we're going to use is, you know, user fees or, you know, the sort of the take rate user fee model that comes off of this fiber deployment, I would probably say, okay, it's worth a shot. but the interest rate that you're going to pay on that, because it's a, you know, it really is that mentality of we, you know, you build and they will come, and you bondholders, you have to trust that if we build, they will come. Well, bondholders don't really love that idea, and they're going to charge you. It's a risk return. That puts them in a higher risk position. They're going to want higher return. Mm-hmm. Well, the whole concept could be made better by saying to that same local government, and here are a couple of options. Does that local government have the ability to pledge sales taxes? So it's another source of revenue. That's what they're going to use as security. So we can get them a lower interest rate on the debt, which makes it a higher likelihood that you can repay it from the system revenues. Other alternatives would be to do what's called, and they're called different things in different states, Melrose bonds in California, assessment bonds in Utah, local improvement districts in Idaho, just to name a few. With that, you can do what's called a voluntary assessment bond, approach was utilized in Brigham City, Utah. And, you know, basically, you know, someone has to marshal the city in conjunction with service providers, whatever, has to marshal and get out in the neighborhoods and say to people, do you want fiber to your home? Okay, you need to allow us to put an assessment lien against your property for, you know, so many years, depending upon how it's financed. And for that, what you get in return for that is you will have fiber to your home. And in that particular instance, again, we could utilize those assessment liens to construct the fiber, but the user fees and whatnot that would come in could be used to effectively reduce what those assessment liens might have to be at their maximum. So there's a number of creative ways to structure the debt so that you get the interest rate lowered to increase the likelihood that with a full ubiquitous deployment and reasonable take rates in that full ubiquitous deployment, that those system revenues themselves will likely be the repayment source, even though your security source is something else, just so that you can get the interest rate down.
Mm-hmm. So, Dave, do you think that, based on what both of you are saying, that if the community does a strong needs assessment effort where they get out and they talk to stakeholders, people have done surveys, they have done rallies, they have done a myriad of things that both educate and also build support for the network. They also identify needs, they identify who the potential subscriber is going to be. I mean, there's a whole ritual. I mean, that's kind of what I do, but it is that type of effort I'm gathering. If they do that part well, it will make the ability to build that political support easier because it provides you with data and it provides you with testimonials and just a raft of material that you can just throw on the fire to say, you know what, this is, we're gonna make this work.
That's a very important first step, but it's only the first step because where you might get stuck right after that is do you even have the legal ability to build a broadband network? And that's a state by state issue currently. Now the FCC is looking at whether or not they can preempt state laws that restrict municipalities. But those state laws are wide and plentiful. And it starts from something known as Dillon's Rule, versus home rule. Home rule states are where cities have the ability to do just about anything unless the legislature has said they can't. In a Dillon's rule state, it's just the opposite, where you can only do those things where the legislature has said you can. And so if you find yourself in a Dillon's rule state, you've got a real conundrum unless you have specific authorizing legislation that says you can build a telecommunications system. Even so, in a home rule state where you might have wide authority to do so, the legislature might have passed legislation that says you can't. Utah is a great example of that, where the legislation says if you as a city want to be a retail provider, you really can't do it. But if you want to be a wholesale provider, you can. And that becomes a real challenge from a business modeling perspective in terms of generating revenue. Do you have enough? Are you pricing yourself out of the marketplace, et cetera, et cetera? And so the second step beyond the politics, after you've garnered that support, is making sure that you really have the authority. And if you don't, you might have yourself a legislative battle trying to get the authority to do so. Massachusetts is a great example where the Wired West project was seeking to provide telecommunications, and the only way that we could find that where they could do so was through something called municipal lighting districts, which had the authority to do so, and that's how the Wired West project was formed. And so you might even find yourself hearkening back to old archaic laws that may not have been originally intended for broadband, but were written in such a way that they can be interpreted that way.
Right. And here in California, there's a legislative effort going on to try to classify a category, which would be public good, public works, infrastructure projects. And then after having created that category, or defining, maybe it might be the better word, defining that particular category, inserting broadband into that, and thus making it available for money that would be set aside for infrastructure projects. So in that respect there, the legislature is creating a vehicle similar to what Wired West has in previous standing, meaning they had the this type of a district already in code, and now they're just basically putting cities into that established category. Here in California, we're talking about creating the category. And then, it'll be a battle, and it's going to be long, and nothing's ever quick. But and I think that's really what your point is that, while we're doing all of the needs assessment stuff, which you have to do anyway, regardless of which route you're going to take, you've got to simultaneously, if you're considering doing a bond measure, you've got to simultaneously explore the legalities of whatever exists in your state relative to bonds.
Yeah, that's a great example, Craig, and it's also a great example of the need for municipal projects to understand what each other happens to be doing, because what works in one state may or may not work in another state,
yeah.
But it may be worth looking at, and I think oftentimes you get so far into the project where you don't pull your head up out of the sand to look around a bit to see that you're not alone. One other thing I might mention is that from the legal perspective, I think there's a fundamental need to insert a very simple change into the tax code, which would allow the issuance of tax-exempt bonds for broadband, even when they are operated by private operators. Right now, if you have a private operator involved in the system, as Laura talked about earlier, you may have to issue your debt on a taxable basis, which increases your interest rate. And I think it would be probably a 5 or 8 word change in the tax code that would allow tax-exempt bonds to be issued and not violate those rules. That's something that I think collectively as municipal projects we could work toward.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. So the legal part is key. Now, in terms of doing... the research. I mean, I obviously understand that, you know, for Dave, this is your business. So clearly, having people call you is valuable. But is this something that, you know, can this be handled by, say, a city attorney, or is this area, this whole bond area, something that you need, you know, specialized legal counsel for?
Great question. As a former city attorney, what I would say is that I respect all city attorneys, but they all have lots and lots to do on their plate. Mm-hmm. And this is such a specialized area where I would not recommend that they go it alone, so to speak. Typically, you have borrower's counsel, which is the role that I fill, and then you have bond counsel involved as well, involved in the issuance of the securities. And those are very specialized functions where if you do it wrong, it has big consequences. And so I would not recommend they go it alone, although I do respect their ability to come up to speed and do so.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, they just have too much on their plate to be able to focus on the issues that need to be paid attention to. Obviously,
right.
I wouldn't turn down any phone calls either, but but at the same time, it really is a specialized thing that deserves specialized attention, and maybe Laura could speak to it as well. So
right, okay.
Yeah, one of the many benefits you get out of separate legal counsel, which is imperative to, I think, this type of issue, is, you know, that separate legal counsel understands it very fine, in the weeds detail, the issues relative to tax law and securities law. And as these debt obligations are issued, they will provide an opinion that protects the city that is backed by that firm's liability insurance. So it's there's a very real benefit in having that expertise as well as the added opinion and insurance that comes with that.
Mm-hmm. And Craig, sometimes city attorneys do act in the role that I fill as their own borrower's counsel. One thing that I've been concerned about, especially since 2008 when we've seen a number of bond issues get into trouble, is that when city attorneys act in their own capacity that way, especially when they're in-house, effectively you're not getting that insurance coverage that Laura's talking about. You, on the one hand, you get it from bond counsel, but you don't get a secondary set of coverage from borrower's counsel. And instead, you end up in a situation where if the city attorney gets it wrong, perhaps under the local state immunity acts, the city attorney can turn to the city and ask for the city to defend the attorney for having gotten it wrong. So not only do you not get the insurance, but you may have to pay on top of that.
Mm-hmm. So sort of to wrap this part of the discussion up, it seems like it would be helpful to have the expertise of someone or several someones who specialize in this area, but at the same time, I think it's to a city's benefit to have or to make sure that their lawyers, the city attorneys, spend some amount of time becoming more knowledgeable about this so that you have someone close at hand who is developing that expertise as well as having the outside expert as well, and you kind of double, you're backing each other's legal resources up that way.
Yeah, no question about that. And I'm very careful when I work with the city attorneys not to step on their turf,
right.
And to make sure that they understand that I'm not there trying to steal their client or anything like that. Rather, it's to provide specialized knowledge about the broadband world that they may or may not have.
Okay. So let's move into the discussion of the financial opportunities and challenges, or the financial waters that one has to go through. And we'll start with Laura, because this is obviously your area. How do you what are some key financial concerns that communities need to look at as they evaluate whether or not the bond option makes sense for them?
I'm going to start at the, you know, the very most basic. They need to have really good data in regard to what the cost of the project will be. And, you know, the technical experts listening in will understand the terminology more than me, but there's like an active way to deploy or inactive way to deploy, and, you know, what those costs are going to be not only up front in construction, but they need to understand very comprehensively what the ongoing operations and maintenance costs will be. While we, you know to the best of my knowledge that fiber has a, you know, sort of unknown life, but it's, you know, well beyond 50 years that it's been tested. But the electronics on the end, you know, just like any electronic component, does need to be replaced. They, you know, wear out. So, you know, very good information from, you know, what I would say, you know, ought to be a, you know, an independent third party to the city that has the expertise. I'd probably do a request for proposal on that and, you know, make sure you're, you know who you're working with and what their expertise is. So you really want to understand the expenses. And, you know, similarly, that same expert, you know, may or may not be the right entity to give you some good information relative to what the likely take rates might be, what type of, you know, revenues could be anticipated, what sort of charges are going to be acceptable in the market. And, you know, because you really need to do a very thorough cash flow analysis. Sorry, I have to switch my headset's beeping in my ear. So you really need to understand, you know, and stress test that cash flow analysis from, you know, the standpoint of, okay, it's going to cost X million to build. It's going to take 2 years. You know, so you've got the cost that you'll incur during those 2 years in terms of interest expense, and you won't have as many revenues those first years as the system's coming online. And, you know, when you have that information, I would recommend you get your, you know, sort of your whole team together, you know, legal, finance, both your in-house and outside experts to be reviewing that and getting educated at the same time. To stress test that model and make sure that everyone's very comfortable with that. Once you've done that, then it's a matter of identifying, I know, what is legally available to you, to that entity in terms of securing the debt. And then the next you know, test that has to go through is what's legally available, what's politically acceptable and palatable. You know, so your team might come up with, well, you could pledge, you know, electric utility revenues, you could pledge sales tax, or we could have a, you know, general obligation vote. Maybe those are the three arrows in the quiver in that particular state. Well, you know, then we have to decide, okay, is it going to be politically palatable to you know, to pledge electric revenues in this instance? You know, is it going to be, do we have the time and wherewithal and, you know, support of the masses to get the voter education out if you're going to do a general obligation bond? So that's kind of the waterfall of how I would, you know, see that being approached on a case-by-case basis.
Mm-hmm.
And did that answer your question?
Well, no, that tells me what the first step is. You know, the stress test is critical. I guess one of the other things that I'm looking for, or that probably folks in the audience are looking for, is are there certain, in a general sense, certain signs or outcomes of these stress tests that if you get X, you should probably say maybe the bond measure isn't for us, or if I see,
right,
you know, A, well, yes, we should probably, you know, at least go to the next step with this.
Right. One of the interesting outcomes of exploring this, and I've seen it relative not just to fiber, we financed natural gas in a couple of communities, smaller communities in Utah years ago, that interestingly, you know, the local entity in Utah that provides natural gas to many areas, the cities had approached them and, you know, they'd given them, oh, yes, we'll come and do that for your city for X large number of $1 million. City approached us and said, you know, we want to, you know, do our own natural gas system, which they certainly can do, and we finance that. Well, we're in the middle of the financing, and lo and behold, the incumbent gas provider went back and said, oh, well, really, we can do that for lower. Well, the cities were smart and went ahead and did their own natural gas system. So you'll see some of that, and you know that needs to be taken into account from a stress test perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But signs that, you know, so I would certainly caution your audience. They need to be prepared. You said something earlier, Craig, that maybe, you know, want to remind them. They really need to be prepared for the long haul. You mentioned this isn't easy. It's not quick. You really have to be in it for the long haul and be tenacious, and, you know, that persistence will prevail. But things that might, you know, if for instance, you were to see in your feasibility study that the only way this kind of cash flows is that you need a 50% take rate, and, you know, you have information from experts in the industry that say, you know, unless there's nothing here but dial-up, and there are places where that exists, unless there's nothing in this community but dial-up, maybe 50% is too high of a take rate. And, you know, I would probably be very concerned if you were looking at that high of number that needed to support this from a cash flow perspective. If the city's, you know, aware that it's going to require 50% to make it really cash flow, but and we think we're only going to get 30, then the, you know, rubber meets the road question is, are you, you know, the debt issuer, whether that's city or county or whatever it is, are you, you know, politically willing to cover that delta for the benefits of economic development? Because it may be that getting XYZ big industry in town will attract, you know, the multiplier effect of, okay, we get this new industry, we get new high-paying jobs, those people are shopping in our stores. So there could certainly be political reasons to support that even in that instance. But those discussions have to be had. So to me, again, I am all about the, you know, the cash flow and the numbers and the money. It would be those kind of signs. If I looked at something and thought, yeah, you know, kind of the gut check of, really, you know, I'm paying. I mean, another one of those might be what, you know, and looking at that analysis is, okay, you know, today I'm paying, I'm making up numbers, today I'm paying, you know, $150 for my triple play service, which includes this level of you know, fiber connectivity. Under this new model, if I have to pay more than that, and again, usually that's not the case, it's usually less than, but that would be another thing I'd be, you know, sensitive to. If people's all-in fees are going to go up, then that's going to have a downward pressure on the types of take rates you're going to get. And mm-hmm. again, most people that are probably listening in probably have some kind of gut check of what they pay, you know, their sample size of one, what they pay, what would they pay. They're familiar with their communities, you know, sort of the wealth measurement of that community. Are they well above median adjusted gross household income? Are they well below that? I think they'll sort of have a sense for what will our community bear and, you know, be able to kind of give it that local gut check of, do these numbers seem to make sense to me? And I think it really needs to go through that kind of test.
Mm-hmm. So now we got about 12, 15 minutes here. Starting with Dave, I want to explore this thing, our idea. So pilot projects, though I understand now that the word pilot is becoming not in vogue because it seems to evoke this perception that people don't know what they're doing. But in the tech world, in enterprise applications, you have a pilot project because you test a lot, you know, about the technology that you're about to deploy. I have been advancing this idea that communities need to have a pilot project, whatever you call it, that tests not so much the technology, particularly if it's an all, you know, mostly fiber network, because that stuff pretty much works, but the pilot should test financial assumptions, marketing messaging assumptions, and a laundry list of business-related issues, as in, will the business of broadband be successful? Do that via a pilot project that may represent 20-25% of the intended area. What's your thought on that? And we'll start with Dave, I think, and then go to Laura. But is a pilot project, if it's large enough, can it address some of these issues that you have both brought up relative to what you need to do to, you know, make that go-no-go decision with a bond effort?
Yeah, I think it can be a useful effort, depending on how it's done, because what it does is it validates the business model assumptions and the financial model assumptions so that when you do go to the bond market, there's more credibility on the cash flow basis. I don't think that gets you out of having some other underlying collateral, but nonetheless, I think it gives more credibility that towards success or not success. But I think there's another facet of that question, and that is, how do you define success as a community? And one of the great errors I think we make in the municipal broadband world is always defining success as it must be cash flow positive and therefore profitable. There are communities where, as Laura indicated, this may be so important that without it, you don't get new business locating to your cities. Because as businesses look for a place to locate, fiber or broadband availability may not be the ultimate decision maker, but it certainly is one of the first exclusionary factors. So if I'm going to locate my business in your city and you don't have it, then you're probably X'd off the list. And so in some communities, success may not be cash flow positive. Success may be enhancing the business community or enhancing healthcare. And so I think it's very important that in the pilot projects you define what that is. It's a very interesting thing. I've asked elected officials from time to time, when was the last time their police force turned a profit? And they look at me dumbfounded and say, what do you mean? And I said, well, you have a police force. Is it turning a profit? And they don't even know how to answer the question because, of course, it doesn't. The police force is there to provide other community benefits. And so I think it's important to define what those are ahead of time. And now, if you do define it as cash flow positive, which is just fine, then that's where the financial side of this comes into play to prove out the validity of those models and the validity of the business side. And then finally, I think it goes without saying that you have to have a marketing or a community awareness campaign. You can't leave it to the providers if you're a wholesale network or just to your employees alone if you're a community retail network to do the marketing on their own. This has to be a community effort, and it has to be embraced and owned by the community. If it's not, you'll find that people don't come on board as quickly.
Mm-hmm. Laura, what are your thoughts?
I agree with what Dave said wholeheartedly. I don't know that I have a lot to add to that.
Okay. So in closing, maybe we'll go with each of you, starting with Laura. What are key points to leave with people about, you know, that are weighing this option for a bond effort? Oh, you know, actually, before I do that, let me ask this question. Is it possible and practical to consider a bond measure for, say, 25% of the total network or 30%? Because there are a number of folks across the U.S. who have, in lieu of not being able to get a lot of money for the full project, have built 25 to 30% of the network and then used that, you know, success and the attention that it draws and the fact that it creates a whole bunch of envy throughout the rest of the community and let that drive then the fundraising to build out the rest of the network. Would a bond be useful, valuable in that scenario? And again, we'll start with Laura, but we only got about 5 minutes.
Yes, I think it could be. It'd be a matter of, you know, making sure that you communicate to the bond holders that you are phasing. And I think one of the biggest challenges with that is you know, sort of the other side of that envy. If you're one of the have-nots, you might, you know, be bugging your city about when's it coming to me, when's it coming to me. And the local government just needs to be prepared to deal with that and have the right answers in that regard.
Okay.
It's also important if you're going to phase the project in that way that you focus on customer connections. You can phase the project in such a way where you build a lot of middle mile, which is what has happened with the stimulus money. But then how do you connect the end users?
And
you get to a point where you don't have sufficient cash flow to float the next bond, and that becomes a problem. And then you end up with what Laura's talking about. And one of the things that we faced on the Utopia project was anti-disappointment, where people are so excited about it, they call and you have to tell them, sorry, we can't connect you because we used all our money on middle mile and didn't save enough to connect the customers. So I think that's a danger, but I think phasing can be a useful strategy.
Okay. Well, let's see, what do we got? We got about 4 minutes. So now I will come to the final question. You know, two things leave people with that are considering, you know, do we proceed or do we at least pursue this idea or not? Start with Laura.
I would say get educated themselves first of what their options are, and not to forget to utilize their, the professional resources that are available to them, because many of those, you know, will be happy to help educate them at no cost and at least say, here are the different things and here's an approach to take. So that would be my A number one.
Okay. Dave?
I would lead with this. It's not about the technology. The technology exists, it works, and I think oftentimes project directors focus so much on the technology that they forget about the money side. And so it's about the ability to finance, it's about the structure under which you do that, and as you focus on those things, the technology, the construction, all of those things are relatively easy compared to those.
Mm-hmm.
So I would focus on those at least as much as you do on the technology.
Okay. Now, unless this is a politically charged question, you can answer in 1 minute each, starting with Dave. What should we expect out of Utopia? Is that going to – I mean, there's just so much going on right now. You've got the Macquarie deal, and then you've got cities considering and reconsidering their position and the AstroTurf groups and all of that. What's going to happen with Utopia?
What I predict is long-term success.
Okay.
In one form or fashion, I don't know how that shakes out quite yet, but that's what I predict.
Fair enough. That makes sense. Laura, what do you think?
I would concur with that. It's certainly been a very, as you also alluded to, Craig, it's been a very long learning curve. There have been many of the challenges that Utopia has faced were not brought on by themselves, and that message is certainly not out there. But what's deployed works. It works fast. People who are on it want to stay on it and don't want to get off and don't want to go to the incumbents. Everyone loves having the choice of 18 service providers. I read in an Economist article, it's been a number of months back, but indicated that 75% of people in the U.S. only have one choice for Internet service providing at their home. And, you know, one choice is what we refer to as a monopoly. And we know what pricing is like in a monopoly, and the reason that I predict long-term success is because of the choices it will offer the consumer. And with what's being explored now, if we really can see full ubiquitous deployment in some of these larger cities, I think it will turn the tide as to how people view and utilize Utopia Fiber.
Okay. And with that, we're going to come to the end of our show. I want to thank you, Dave and Laura, for both being here to make a fairly complex topic definitely a little more understandable for folks, for our listeners. And I think there's a lot of benefit from the information that you've shared with us today. So thank you very, very much for that. I appreciate it, as I'm sure our audience does.
Thank you.
And thank you for the work that you're doing in this important area.
Sure. Sure. And speaking of which, listeners should go, well, listeners who are in Colorado and Iowa should go to cjspeaks.com because I'm doing a 5-week webinar series where a lot of the issues that were covered today and also yesterday where we talked about, you know, understanding the technology and how the tech side stuff impacts the business side decisions, this is going to be covered in a small group, sort of a training exercise on some very key fundamentals to planning and moving your broadband projects. So with that, I'm going to say goodbye, and we'll talk again soon. Have a great day.